You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is Kimar Roach, and I listen to the Caribbean Cricket Podcast.
Yes, 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 ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition, another episode of the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. I'm one half of the Caribbean Cricket Podcast, Mashal St. Patrick Hewitt. And with me as ever is a partner in crime, Santokhi Nagulendran. Santokhi, how you doing?
Yeah, all good, Mash. And today we're dropping a special episode just to look at what's been a talking point, you know, on social media and around the region. It pertains to the big tour of England, West Indies Test Tour, in England, taking place in July. Obviously, this felt like the right time to do this episode with the regional season resuming this coming Wednesday with a load of regional games. We're here to address the big talking point, Mash. Obviously, Craig Brathwaite as captain of West Indies, cementing his spot going into that England tour as our opener. But the big question, some may say it's not a debate. Others say, you know, this is up for debate. Who will partner Craig Brathwaite when West Indies walk out at Lord's on July the 10th? So we're here, Mashal, to look at, you know, Tej Narayan Chanderpool, everything around him, and also look at potential people who may have put their name in the hat to get that lucrative opening spot in the test side.
Most definitely. And I think first things first, before we kind of break into it and look at the runners, the riders, the contenders, etc., it's worth noting that you put up a poll earlier today on Twitter, X, and you said, we will be recording a video later on who opens with Craig Brathwaite versus England. Does Tej Narayan Chanderpool make your XI or 11? If not, reply with who you think should open. Now, at the time of recording, Santokhi, that poll currently reads the following. Yes has 74.4% that Tej should still be opening come England, and no has 25.6%. If you go by the comments below, there's more people cussing out Tej than backing Tej. But we have to assume that the people who have said yes are like all over the world, because obviously the followers on Twitter are numerous and from generally around the world rather than just within the Caribbean. So first thing, I think off the back of that, Santokhi, obviously we've got a poll number. It's a small sample size of 300, but it's a poll number which kind of says essentially three quarters of people believe Tej should stay opening. But what I did next after looking at that poll is I went and looked at Tej's record for the West Indies. As things currently stand, Santokhi, Tej has played 10 test matches. He's batted 19 innings and he averages 32, right? Now, on the face of it, if you average anything above 30 for the West Indies in test cricket, you're doing well. And whether people want to accept that or not, that's the reality of playing for the West Indies in 2024 or the 21st century. Anything in the low to mid 30s is basically the same as averaging 45 for one of the top nations, generally speaking, for the West Indies, right? However, that 32, 33 that Tej averages is skewered massively by that 207, not out, I hasten to add, that he scored in Zimbabwe. Now, since that 207 not out that he scored in the first innings, a first test against Zimbabwe, these have been his scores, Santolki. 36, 22, 10, 1, 2, 12, 7, 33, 24 not out, 6, duck, 21, 4. So he essentially hasn't passed. He hasn't passed 50 in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 in his last 13 test innings. Now, I've seen players like Roston, Chase, Shea Holt, for example, play for the West Indies and not pass 50 for a very long time and still keep their spot. So I'm reluctant, Santolki, to jump all over that no 50s in 13 innings and denounce Tej and say, well, that's it. He needs to be dropped, because I've seen players get much lengthier rope than him before getting dropped for not passing 50 and so on and so forth. Much less he's batting in one of the most perilous positions, playing for one of the weakest weakest full member sides in world cricket. Where do you stand first and foremost, Santolki, after all of that long intro and without us looking at anyone else? Just look at Tej in isolation. Where do you stand?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think you've got to give it context in terms of who he's played. You know, it's South Africa away, mm-hmm. India at home. You know, we've seen what quality India have, and then Australia away. So on that context, you could say it's hard to score runs. However, with Tej, it's a tricky one, Mash. I think there's different aspects where you can approach this from. I think the fact, if we take the Australia tour, for instance, in 2022, his debut mm-hmm. series, he averaged 40. Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward a year later, he's averaging 7.75. That's a massive decline. And you've got to ask yourself then, how has his standards managed to decline to that point where he's going to the same country in the space of a year and his average is dropping? So I think that has led to sort of questions about it. We've said on previous podcasts, all right, the regional season is time, you know, where Tej puts his hand up and says, I'm going to score runs, and sort of ends any debate about it. So far in the regional season, he didn't bat in the first match against Trinidad and Tobago because of rain. So he's had 4 innings in the subsequent 2 regional matches he's played. He scored 83 runs and averaged 20. So again, it's disappointing runs from there. So I think, whilst I think, like you said, we've seen players been given numerous chances, Roston Chase being a perfect example, as you said, I do think we can't say, at the same point where I don't think we should say drop Tej, I also don't think we can say he's guaranteed his spot. I think there are question marks around that. And the upcoming 4 rounds of the regional season are going to be critical, I think, for Tej's spot. I think he'll get called to the squad regardless, because I can't see an opener and a backup opener essentially performing. You'd have to put up 2 batsmen would have to put up big runs in the regional rounds to Tej to be displaced completely from the squad. So I think he'll make the squad. However, I do think there are slight question marks as to whether he makes that 11 in the first test. So Mash, I think we've sort of looked at Tej. Now let's look at sort of the fellow openers in the regional season. Who do we want to start with? Has anyone sort of made any claims? Who are we going to start with as potential candidates to kind of take over from Tej as an opener, if there was a scenario where Tej doesn't score runs and he gets dropped from that 11?
So before I give you some names, somebody that I'm ruling out unless they have a massive turnaround in the last 4 rounds of the championship is Zachary McCaskey. Yes. And it's important that we start there, because obviously Zachary went as the backup to Australia. If one of Craig or Tej had got injured, Zachary McCaskey would have debuted and played versus the Aussies. Now, if I remember rightly, I think Zachary actually did all right in the warm-up games, or at least one of them, prior to the Australia Test Series. I need to go back and remind myself. I swear he scored a few runs in one of those warm-up games. But in the first 3 rounds of the domestic championship, Zachary scored 99 runs. Let me just double-check if it's 99. 99 runs at an average of 20, right? Top score of 30. So my thing is this. If we are arguing that Tej deserves a bit longer of a rope before he gets dropped, 13 innings isn't enough yet to decide definitively that's it for him. If we're arguing that Tej gets a bit of a longer rope, I can agree with you on that and say that Tej drops down to the backup opener, but it means that Zachary drops out altogether, because he has to score runs. He can't replace Tej when he's not scoring runs domestically either, right? So I think we can agree that even if we keep Tej, there's a gap for someone regardless as whether you agree he's that person is a backup opener or if you agree that person is the opener. So this changes the way we look at this slightly, Santoki, because there are some people who have made runs who I would say, okay, you can go, but I'm not trusting you to open in England. That might be peak for you. So you're going as the backup opener. Tej gets one more series. There's other people who I'm willing to say, you can go and replace Tej. Do you see where I'm coming from? Because of experience level. So let's start with one, Santoki. I'll give you one name who I think if they get picked, it's to replace Tej. It's not to be the backup opener. And I think it's Jeremy Solorzano. So currently Jeremy has 215 runs at 72 apiece. It's worth noting that Jeremy has had three not outs in that in those 215 runs as well. Top score of 86, and average, like I say, an average of 72. Obviously, Santoki, Jeremy three years ago, was due to be the opener. When he got a pick, which was seen as controversial at the time, people questioned, well, how did Solorzano get picked? What runs had he really made to get into the West Indies side? Then he got licked down in Sri Lanka and we never saw him again. If Solorzano gets picked, Santoki, would you put him in ahead of Tej?
As you said, his form has been good. The move from Trinidad and Tobago to Windward Islands has obviously paid off for him. He's formed a good partnership with Kimani Melius, who's the captain of the Windwards. Solorzano is an unusual one, Mash, because he got called up to West Indies. What was he? He was averaging like 25 or something in his first class career. As you said, he literally got licked down. The ball hit his head and he got taken off for concussion protocol. Then we never saw him again. He never got another call up to West Indies. He fell out of the Trinidad and Tobago regional side and he sort of reinvented himself. So Solorzano is someone who selectors and the coaching staff in the past has believed as international quality. And that wasn't that long ago, 2.5 years ago. So not much should have changed. Technically, he should be worthy of an international call-up. So I agree with you. I think Solorzano is someone who, if he gets called up, is not to be a designated backup opener. It will be someone who's in direct competition with Tej for that spot. Again, I think the four rounds coming up are going to be crucial for him. If he continues in this vein, because like you said, Mash, crucially, he's not getting out. That's a big thing. He's the fact that nobody's being able to take his wicket. He's averaging 71 at the moment, 215 runs. So Solorzano, for me, is probably, if you're looking, if we're going to go through the other openers, but just as an overview, Solorzano, you could argue, would be the favourite to take over from Tej as an opener in England, based on the fact that, you know, he did get an international call-up 2.5 years ago. His average is very, very high for a regional standard at the moment. Everything is sort of aligned for Solorzano to have that potential.
Yeah, it's worth noting before people try and come for us. When Solorzano got picked to tour Sri Lanka, he had played two matches against India A in 2019, which is what I think this is based off. And he scored 250s against India A, an average 60. He then played the Super 50 2019-2020. And in the eight matches in that Super 50, he averaged 42. So there was some kind of domestic numbers to go off, although his actual first-class championship prior to that West Indies call-up, he averaged 24. So this is why people are like, hold on, what? How's he suddenly in the West Indies test side, right? Since then, I'm just looking at his numbers, Santoki. In the 2022 West Indies championship, he averaged 27 with 250s in four matches. In 2023, he played three matches and averaged 16. Super 50 last year, he played four matches and averaged 36. And obviously this year is averaging 72. So we have to accept that even if we said Solorzano, there is a bit of recency bias because it's not like he's been putting up consistent numbers after numbers after numbers. But no one's been putting up consistent numbers after numbers after numbers. So there's no use anyone trying to bring that stat to us and saying, but, because in that case, it's Tej, because no one else is doing anything either, right? On a consistent level. Let's go to the next big thing, Santoki. Mikhail Louis has played in Cool and Smooth. So it's not like Mikhail Louis hasn't existed beforehand. He actually, I saw a video with him. I think there was a backstory which I think has been intimated by some that Maybe he paid for a few indiscretions earlier on in his career. I think some CPL indiscretions or whatnot, bubble indiscretions earlier in his career. Maybe, maybe not. But the point is, he's here now, right? And he's made his name this season because he scored back-to-back. Let me get his numbers again. He scored back-to-back centuries. He's also got a 50. So technically, he has the best record in the tournament so far in terms of milestones, 200s and 150. He's the leading run scorer after three rounds, 343 runs at 57 apiece. Even one of the dismissals he got, I think, in the last round was a teeth-out dismissal. So he's leading the way. The obvious question for me, Santoki, is just because he's leading the way, just because he's scoring runs, just because he scored a milestone back-to-back, youngest player to score back-to-back 50s in the longest while, first player to do it in the longest while, who wasn't like an old, like, senior cricketer. Are we in such a state, Santoki, where if you just score recency runs, you're just in? It don't matter if you've got no extensive domestic, never mind international, no extensive domestic experience behind you. You're just in because beggars can't be choosers.
No one's setting a standard, Mash. There's not anyone in the region who you said is piling on the runs on a consistent basis. So there's not really a standard. There's not like a benchmark that anyone needs to reach. So Louis, he's had a great start. He's only 23 years old. Twin centuries. I mean, we saw Darren Bravo do that last season and didn't get picked for all the runs. But I think Louis, I don't think he should be rushed into a West Indies squad. However, if he scores two more centuries across these four rounds, I can imagine there'll be a temptation to call him up, you know, because I just think anyone scoring runs and he's in that age bracket where they're likely to pick him. I think, like you said, if it's a veteran, put it this way, if Chadwick Walton was putting up those twin centuries and runs, he's not going to get picked because of his age. However, Louis is in that age bracket where they might think, you know what, this is someone who's 23 years old. He's showing promise. He's got the runs. He's ticking all the boxes, criteria. So I think it's far-fetched. I don't think he will get called up for the England tour. However, it's not out of the realms of possibility if he piles on the runs at the rate he has so far. Again, he's kind of got headlines. A lot of fans are calling for him to be called up. We've seen it on social media. A lot of us, even today with the poll I put up, we had a few people saying Louis should be getting the call up. And that kind of shows the state of the regional game, Mash, where three rounds of regional cricket can have a man staking legitimate claims to walking out at Lords. So I think for his own personal development, I think Louis should be given more time, you know, getting to grips with the regional season. This is a maiden regional season.
Thank you. I'm so glad you just said that, because I was just about to say, it's not just three rounds of regional cricket. Yeah. This is first three matches of his whole life cut. Are we really saying a man can go from three matches, your first three matches in your life, straight into the West Indies team? Is that where I guess that's where we're at, Santoki.
But then, do you know what? I know it's different, but the current argument could be, look what happened with Shamar Joseph. But obviously, fast bowling is a different art form. But that could be used in defence. But I think you can't just have him come to England after just playing one regional season. I think he's got to be given at least another campaign to build that consistency, get used to playing the longer format and that kind of thing. However, Mash, as we always say, never a dull day in West Indies cricket. So when Desmond Haynes is doing that press conference, Louis might be the first name out of his mouth, you know?
I'm not ruling it out. This is why I refuse to be the guy who says under no circumstances should he go to England. The rational me is saying under no circumstances should he be going to England. I don't see how that benefits his career. But then look at what we've done in the last... look at what we did last season, Santoki. Mm. Kirk McKenzie's got rushed in. He wasn't ready. And then Kirk went to flipping Australia and technically returned with the best numbers out of all of the batters. So if I'm Desmond Haynes, I'm looking at the situation going, well, boy, we might as well play youth man because at least they're not scarred by match after match of defeat. What's to lose by picking youth men who are in form? I personally don't recommend it. We know that West Indies A are playing South Africa A later in the summer. Surely that's a better place to have him develop. If they must pick him, there's no harm in him turning up in England and playing a tour game versus Kent. If we know that, so not Kent, the first class counties select team. There's no harm in that happening. But to go straight into a test match set up against England? I don't know. I'm not sure.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Someone who may have a better claim than Louis, though, and this is going to be interesting, is, let me just find him, Johan Jeremiah. Now, I'm calling, he may have a better claim. Now, obviously, some people are going to immediately get in the comments and say, but he doesn't open for the Wynwoods. He's batting, I think he's batting at number, I don't even know where they've got him batting. Is it number three or number four? Let me just double check. Where have they got him batting?
Let me just have
can't even find his name right now. oh, here we go. Right. Let me just make sure I get, I always like to make sure my information is correct. So in the last match against three, right. Now the only reason I'm mentioning Jeremiah's name is because in Super 50, Jeremiah was opening for the Wynwoods, right? So yes, white ball is different to red ball and so on and so forth. In last year's Super 50, Jeremiah opening for the Wynwoods averaged 42 across six matches. And so far in the West Indies Championship, he scored 153 runs, two not outs at 38 apiece with 150. Now, I don't know where you stand on this, Santoki, in terms of white ball and red ball, but we don't have that much cricket. Sorry, Jeremiah was opening for
CCC, not Wynwood,
before anyone gets at me. He was opening for CCC and he was good for CCC last year to the point where some people thought that he might get a call up to the ODI side, right? Where do you stand, Santoki, on consistency being good performance in Super 50 followed by good performance in Red Bull cricket? Different formats of cricket, but it at least shows you some level of consistent cricket. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. Some sort of consistent cricket across, whether it be 50 over or first class, because with West Indies cricket, it's almost like beggars can't be choosers. We don't play that many regional first class games. So we almost have to use a wider base. With Jeremiah, I just don't think he has that consistency so far. I mean, I know Super 50, but he only got two half centuries in that tournament across the six games. Again, with the first class season, he's hit 180, but then his scores have been 22 not out, 32, 1 not out, and then 12 and 6 against CCC. So for me, he hasn't got enough consistency at all, or any massive scores to have his name in the hat. So I don't think we'll see Jeremiah. As you said, he's an outsider in this sort of battle for the opener spot, but I just don't think he's reached the consistency or hit the kind of heights as we've seen like a Louis do for him to be getting a jump ahead of him.
Okay, so we can dismiss Jeremiah. So if we dismiss Jeremiah, that leaves Tej keeping his place. Mikhail Louis being the young gun who's drafted in just because at least you're young and you're not used to losing. Jeremy Solorzano, the player who has been called up before but didn't really get a chance. McCaskey, who is the incumbent backup but hasn't done anything to justify still being the incumbent backup. So let's go to an outlier choice. The outlier choice and the name that some people will suggest is Brandon King. Now, the only thing is, we've been talking in the WhatsApp about King. It's going to be very interesting. By the time this comes out, which will be obviously later today on the 12th of March, and lots of people will be watching this tomorrow on the 13th of March, just before the round four begins. I do not know if King is going to open for Jamaica. Brandon King has spent so much time opening for the West Indies in T20 and ODI cricket that we all now just assume he is an opener. He hasn't played a lot of extensive Red Bull cricket in such a long time, but when he did, he was at number four, or certainly in the top order, middle order, right? So we don't know if Jamaica are going to... Chadwick Wharton's playing some Legends League in Sri Lanka or something. So we don't know if Jamaica are going to replace Walton straight, like for like swap with King, or if McKenzie will go to open, or if Leroy Lugg will go to open. But Santoki, if King did open, how many scores? Because we've been told that Brandon's going to play the remainder of the domestic championship. If Brandon King opens Santoki and scores, how many 50s would he need to score for him to just go straight into the West Indies team?
150 would take him, book him that fly on. He's made it. No, but I think if King hits a century in the next game, I think that's an automatic. I think he's, as an opener, I think he's thrown his name into the hat. But again, if he can get 250s in the first three games he plays, that could lead it to there. But again, it's going to depend on what everyone else does. But I think if King can get at least 250s, his name is definitely up there. And if it's as opener as well, there's going to be a big cause for him to get a call up. We've always said, Mash, he's someone who should be given an opportunity in the test side, just because we know the quality, the range of shots he has. It's weird because up until 2019, he was primarily a first-class player. And that CPL season for Guyana Amazon Warriors, where he tore it apart, scored a big century at Providence in the semi-finals, that sort of pigeonholed him into a white ball player. And he's never been able to have the schedule to have, as you said, extensive first-class cricket. So he's kind of had to put his preferred format on the back burner and go where West Indies have called him for the white ball game. So I think if Brandon King can regain some form, he hasn't played first-class cricket since the A-team tour against Bangladesh almost a year ago. If he can get two or three half centuries, then he's got his name in the hat, Mash, because as an opener, as we know the quality King has, it's, and at the age he is as well, 29, for me, it's now or never. You're going to call Brandon King this year up, or we sort of lost him. So I would say, let's say 350s. If he scores three half centuries across the next four rounds, because he has confirmed he's going to be captain as well, he's going to play the rest of these four rounds. If he can get three half centuries, his name's in the hat. What do you think?
So I went to look at, so just, this is just to sum up Brandon King's last set of Red Bull games. In 2023, he played against Bangladesh A when Bangladesh A came to the Caribbean, batted three innings against them, scored 150, 54, average 18. So that was poor. I think he got a couple of ducks in that as well. That was poor. But before that, he also played one match in the Headley Weeks Championship last season, and he scored 92 in that. Before that, he played the West Indies Championship when he came back from India. We played a white ball series in India. He came back for one round of the West Indies Championship, scored 119 not out. Before that, the last time he played domestic cricket, played one game in 2020, and then in 2019, before that big breakout CPL season you're talking about, he averaged 48 across seven matches in the West Indies Championship. So to be fair to Brandon, when he's got the chance to make runs, he does generally make runs in Red Bull cricket. He hasn't had this extensive amount of Red Bull cricket because of obviously West Indies commitments. So as much as people might say you lot are being ridiculous, he is within a... And also, Santok, we must point out that Desmond Haynes did admit, or sorry, Brandon's agent did admit, that Brandon was sounded out about going to Australia to tour, but Brandon had already given his name to play, I think, Bangladesh Premier League, whatever it was. So, and then there was that, I think he came out in the press and he said, listen, I'm still committed to playing Test cricket for West Indies. I still just think, Santoki, that they would not pick Brandon King to open. There would be more chance of them moving Kirk McKenzie to open to create a spot at number three before I think they put Brandon King to open. So my answer to the question fundamentally is, yes, I can see Brandon King getting called up if he makes, and like I'd say, if Brandon King made two good 50s in the next four rounds, I could see them calling him up, right? But I could then see them moving Kirk McKenzie to open to fit somebody else in. Just before we kind of wrap, where do you fit on that then with Kirk? Do you think they would almost sacrifice Kirk McKenzie's nascent career and say, you know what, you go and open. You replace Tej so we can create a spot in the top order.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. There's a lot of moving parts because obviously Kirk McKenzie, when he first came onto the scene for Jamaica, he opened with John Campbell, I think, and then 2023 he opened as well. So he's got that recent experience of opening at a regional level. King, I can't remember the last time if King has ever opened in first-class cricket. I just know him as batting 3-5 positions. Mm. His best season in where that season where he averaged 40-plus, 2018-19, he was batting at 3 every game. So it would make logical sense for King to come in at 3 for the test side. But then you've also got the counter-argument that, you know, Kirk McKenzie is a young star, long-term prospect in the side. Do you jeopardise his chances of scoring by moving him up? I mean, if you look at Australia, this is obviously a completely different type of player, but Steve Smith, the adjustment from moving from 3 to opener has been massive for him. Kirk McKenzie is just getting to grips with test cricket. So if we're moving him to opener, as you said, the right word would be sacrifice because we're taking a gamble on Kirk McKenzie's career to fit in Brandon King. However, Brandon King's a very, very good player and he's someone who for the next few years could be a massive help for West Indies test side. So it'd be interesting to see how that balance out. And as you said, we'll know in the next 48 hours, depending on how Jamaica Scorpions sort of line up. If Kirk McKenzie gets, obviously with Walton gone, if Kirk McKenzie opens for Jamaica Scorpions, puts run in, then you can see that it sort of worked itself out. They will put him as an opener, could potentially put him as an opener for the England series and move King down to 3. But again, the caveat to that is if Tej Narayan Chanderpaul scores runs over the next 4 rounds, it makes it null and void because then how are you going to fit Brandon King into all of this? So there's a lot of moving parts, but I can see a scenario where they put Kirk McKenzie as opener and fit Brandon King at 3 just to suit everyone's sort of strengths. However, that would be unfair on Kirk McKenzie, but they could say, you know, the game is the game. We have to fit Brandon King in that middle order.
I think fundamentally we sum it up like this. And those of you who are watching, obviously, as usual, get in the comments below, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc. Fundamentally, it's this, Santokhi. Tej Narayan Chanderpaul he cannot say that he doesn't know what the mission is. The mission is clear for him. Score runs, score big runs over the next 4 rounds, and you keep your spot. Simple. So it's actually straightforward for Tej Chanderpaul. Just score some runs and you'll keep your spot. But should Tej not score runs, what we are effectively saying as a Caribbean Cricket Podcast is one of Mikhail Louie, Jeremy Solorzano, Kirk McKenzie maybe being pushed to open, or Brandon King fitting in somehow, somewhere, is the most likely direction that they would then go in if Tej does not step up to the plate. Just for argument's sake, though, Santokhi, let's just say the final thing. Say Tej scores no 50s for the remainder of the... because he hasn't scored any yet. Let's just say, argument's sake, for the remainder of the championship, no 50s or like 150 only across 7 matches. Is it a straight drop out the squad?
You know what? It might have to be, you know. I think if Tej doesn't score and Solorzano hits one more 50, then there's an argument that Solorzano comes in based on form. And I think it'll be harsh on Tej because, like you said, other players have been given second chances. But I just think I can just see a scenario where they might almost use it as an argument that it's for Tej's benefit, you know, take him out of the firing line because he's in that drought. And then we could see a scenario where Tej is given that A-team tour to sort of regain confidence and prove himself again. So I could see a scenario, if Tej doesn't score any other runs, they'll be looking at the stats match and thinking, the man averaged 7 in Australia. We gave him the regional season because this is kind of what, I mean, Bonner as well. Remember they gave Bonner last year the regional season to put together runs. He didn't. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like we've given, they've not explicitly said it, but you can imagine that Tej is essentially, this regional season is where he proves himself. And he'd be expected as an international opener to put together big runs against sides. So it's very interesting to see. I think Guyana, I think they still have to play CCC.
Yeah, they've still got the big bag to come.
Basically, if he doesn't do the Chadwick Walton and hit record numbers of runs against CCC, then we know he's down bad. He might get a drop against that. But yeah, I can envision a scenario where he's not putting together runs and they just think, you know what, it's too much of a gamble to have him in that 11 for the England series. But again, I think he'll still make the squad regardless because of what he has proven in the early stages of his test career. However, then we could see a scenario where, you know, it's down to that match against the county's select 11th who can put together runs in English conditions. So, as you said, you rightly surmised it there. Tej knows the mission. If he doesn't score runs, then, you know, that's something he's brought on himself, and his place is at risk.
100%. Listen, people, that's, we've given you enough there. We've given you enough to go on. Sometimes some of you get in the comments, and I sometimes read some of the comments, and I'm like, did you even watch the episode? Like, you're just making some random uncle type comments without, which must mean you didn't watch it. Watch things all the way through to understand what we're trying to say here. It doesn't mean we're right, but we try to give you the stats, the facts, the statistical analysis, and go from there, you know. Get us in the comments below as ever. Thank you as always for listening to the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. More content is coming. IPL is on the way. PSL is wrapping up. Loads of stuff to look out for. So do stay watching and subscribing and all of that. Notifications on. Congratulations to Jamaica women who have won Super 50. There's one more round of that to go, but we aren't forgetting the fact that there is some domestic women's cricket going on as well. We'll try to get a video out wrapping that up at the end of the tournament as well. Last words to you, Santoki.
Yeah, as you said, a lot of cricket coming up. You know, Jamaica Scorpions women's side, I think it was their first Super 50 win in about 10 years. So they took the throne away from Barbados women. So at least Jamaica's not down bad across all different types of formats. But yeah, as you said, IPL, PSL. We'll be looking to do an IPL special episode in the coming days, with that starting in about just over a week. We'll hopefully have a special guest on. A lot of West Indian players in that. And obviously with the home World Cup coming up, IPL is going to be especially important for players, you know, to have that run of form. So look forward to some more content. We probably pop up with a few more videos like this, dissecting different talking points within the region and surmising what's been going on around the Caribbean. So stay locked for that. Thank you all for tuning in. As always, if you've got different opinions as to what we said, comment below. Do you think someone else should be opening in England? Put your suggestions in the comments to this video on YouTube, and we'll see you on the other side. Have a good night, everyone. Network.